You are listening to CFRO Community Radio Station. The upcoming show, Conscious Living Radio, is a program that explores frontiers of consciousness, spirituality, personal growth, emerging paradigms in psychology, health, science, and innovative philosophies that reflect commitment to the advancement of individual, social, and global transformation.
I think my life is past. Hi, welcome to the show, Conscious Living Radio. I'm Tasha Sims, and we're talking to Galen Watts. He's a PhD candidate. He's studying millennials and spirituality. He's doing extensive field work at a Christian evangelical church, or he was, in Toronto, called C3 for his thesis. It's also part of a film called Hashtag Blessed by Ali Weinstein that will air on CBC Docs July 18th at 8 p.m. And in the film, Galen is a kind of guide, you could say, for those curious about what's going on behind the scenes at this mega church with its really hip, cool pastor. So it's a global church started in Australia. It has over 25 locations in Canada, three of them in Toronto, over 1,500 people in Toronto, and mostly hip urban millennials. Welcome to the show, Galen.
Thanks, Tasha. Happy to be here.
So before we explore, I love the topic, but it's unusual to me to even think about. It's almost like an oxymoron, millennials and Christian evangelical church. But I want to hear about you, first of all, and what inspired you to study millennials and how they relate to spirituality and religion.
Sure. Thanks. So as you were saying in your introduction, I just finished a PhD on millennials and really not just Christian evangelicalism, but spirituality in general. So my research project was really focused on looking at various manifestations of contemporary spirituality across the spectrum. And I guess if I sort of have to reflect on what led me initially to be interested in this, say, 6-7 years ago when I started out, I think that in some respects, all academic research begins with a sort of personal dimension and experience. So I think it was at that time in my life, in undergrad, when I was thinking a lot about meaning, larger questions, fundamental questions. And I became interested in this sort of trend that I was seeing around me. You know, more and more of my friends and people that I knew were identifying as spiritual but not religious. I grew up in a completely non-religious home, I should say, not really sort of hostile to religion or irreligious, but just not religious. I was just not exposed to this. And so in university, partly I think as a result of just different personal experiences, trying to make sense of things, I became interested in this sort of thing that people were calling spirituality. You know, I read books by people like Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, and these were interesting to me. And I just noticed that this was something that a lot of my peers were picking up on. And I think when I got to the end of my undergrad, I did my undergrad in philosophy, actually. I was really interested in these questions from a kind of social science perspective. I was interested in trying to understand why myself, as well as my peers, were interested in these ideas about spirituality. And so my initial foray into this topic was actually for my master's, when I did interviews with people who were spiritual but not religious. So not evangelical Christians in the slightest bit, right. People who obviously would kind of been horrified by evangelicalism. In general, but rather I was just interested in that. So it was a sort of, in many ways kind of precursors, or sorry, not precursors, but those who follow from the sort of New Age movement and more sort of contemporary manifestations of that. And so that was my first, research interest. And I did a, 2-year project interviewing spiritual but not religious millennials. And it wasn't until after completing that, that I then got introduced to the world of evangelical Christianity. And the way into this was it's kind of unique and but I think also interesting. I started to read, just because I was starting a PhD in cultural/religious studies, I started to read literature on Pentecostalism and Neo-Pentecostalism and charismatic Christianity. And what I was reading in the literature was actually, in different ways, kind of very similar to some of the things that I was finding or I had found in my interviews with spiritual but not religious people. That seems I think for lots of people, very, very unintuitive. And
I think you have to name it. What was similar? Because I'm stretching, kind of going,
So
what was similar?
So I think that underlying, even though they are, of course, very polarized, say, politically in lots of ways, I think underlying, for instance, the focus on religious experience, right? You find a marked focus on religious experience among, you know, spiritual but not religious people, as well as among evangelical Christians. That is something that they share. It's a kind of certain approach to, say, the transcendent or
you mean a direct experience to have a direct experience. Exactly.
And also that yet in some sense you can kind of connect by going within and on a kind of deep personal level with what you consider to be divine or what you consider to be a manifestation of the cosmic. So, you know, among SBNRs, right, who sort of follow from New Agers, they often, you know, will talk about the higher self, right, or going within and find sort of a cosmic self. And the idea here is that you can really connect with this directly, as you were saying, often by going within. Now, charismatic Christians, even, you know, like those you find at C3, talk in very similar terms about the Holy Spirit, right? And this being something that you can directly experience. So these were sort of revelations to me when I first started out. These were really interesting similarities. And so I decided at the beginning of my PhD to sort of expand my research focus to include charismatic Christians of the kind that you find at C3 Toronto. So I, you know, it was one of actually two other, sorry, one of three. I had two other case studies, sort of, you know, different case studies of contemporary spirituality.
Wow. So super interesting. But I do want to dive into C3, unpack it, and then easily I could talk for an hour with you, it seems like, on your whole thesis, which maybe is another interview, because there's so much about C3 that I want to talk about. But I want to first paint a picture for people listening going, oh, Christian evangelical, because when you hear how it starts, and this I think is from an article in the Toronto Star, or it was the Globe and Mail, one of the two, it really sounds like a rock concert. I mean, that's the beginning. So let me paint this for you. the crowd is mainly mid-20s, early 30s. Lighting rigs project ever-moving abstract designs on the ceiling. There's a huge screen in the middle of the stage playing a countdown, superimposed on what looks like slow-motion concert footage, shots of people waving their arms in the air, a laser show, and then suddenly a shot of a woman with her arms crossed going back into being dunked backwards into a giant metal tub of water, looking euphoric. It's a baptism. And then the timer runs out and the EDM, the electronic dance music, fades out, and you've got a live 9-piece Christian pop rock band starting off Sunday morning service. And you didn't even have to go to Ticketmaster.
No, so, that's right.
There you go. So that's the visual, because again, people think stodgy, old-fashioned. The whole fascination for me with C3 is how they are preaching to this new generation, to millennials, and using social media, using all those marketing strategies. That to me is so fascinating. Were you surprised by that, by that innovative kind of marketing approach to recruitment?
So I would say that when I first arrived, yes, I was super surprised. But I'm also someone who was kind of coming at this as a newbie. I had never seen anything like this before, certainly not in Toronto, where I grew up. And I just, as you kind of intimated, my version of evangelical Christianity it didn't look like that. You know, what I had in my head, the assumptions that I held. So I was kind of blown away and taken aback. But what I've learned since then is that this is not at all unique to C3 Toronto, right? This is really actually quite a common phenomenon now in contemporary Christian evangelical circles. And you find this within what's often called the church growth movement across the board. Use of of the most up-to-date social media and technologies as a way of kind of amplifying your message and also increasing the spectacle of the worship experience, right? This is really kind of it's quite commonplace, and you find it not just in the U.S., not just in Australia where C3 came from, but it's in Latin America, it's in Africa, it's really quite a widespread thing.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of the guitar, the sort of folksy guitar thing that was happening with coffee houses in Christian coffee houses, which included, you know, cults like Children of God, very on the outside Christian, and as those who may or may not know, a horrifically abusive cult. But the recruitment was the same. Relate to people on a level that makes sense, that is full of love, full of, you know, that on the surface presents as something attractive. And I mean, all the literature that I'm looking at with C3, I mean, your pastors are cool, they're tattooed, the jeans are tight, they're looking kind of hip. And it's like intentional grooming to present in a way that young people might find appealing.
I think that you hit the nail on the head. The pastors at these churches recognize that, you know, when they're trying to appeal to millennials, most millennials, certainly in the West, have a certain kind of cultural sensibility. You know, they're inundated from a very young age with popular culture and pop music. Right. And as a result, they cultivate a certain kind of cultural sensibility, right? Rock and roll, hip hop, all these kinds of, you know, skinny jeans and so forth. And the pastors know that if they present to young people a kind of aesthetic that, you know, is something that would jibe more with, you know, millennials' parents' generation or their grandparents' generation, that they're just going to lose them before they even enter, right? So it's a way of, as you say, trying to make things familiar, right? And appealing to that sort of existing cultural and aesthetic sensibility. And then, you know, bringing them in so that they can be receptive to the message.
And that's part of the training, right? If you're going to be a pastor, you go to Australia, you do the training. And part of it is branding, marketing, how you grow a church. It's literally, you're taught how to do this. Right?
That's right. It's very systematized. Right. Yeah, there's a curriculum.
And so is there anything concerning about that for you?
this is such a interesting question because on the face of it, yes, I think so. But you know, one thing I tried to do over the course of 12 months of field work at C3 Toronto was to actually resist that impulse to judge or criticize, not necessarily because they're wrong, those impulses, but because I really wanted to better understand all of, or as much of the dynamics as I could. But, you know, actually after having been there now for 12 months, I do think that there are concerning issues. And I think those
12
those
months
concerns,
being every Sunday, like you would go just on
yes,
Sundays
exactly.
or for 12
so
months.
So I went on pretty much every Sunday. I mean, every Sunday I was in town, which was most Sundays over 2018. And I also took part in a number of the programs, prayer groups, next steps. So I was there for quite a bit. I got to know quite a lot of people and I interviewed quite a lot of people, members. Over that period, I was really trying to resist criticism and condemnation. But I do think at this point, now that I've sort of had some distance from it and I've written about this, I think that there are concerns. I mean, I know, and I've spoken to for instance, Christians who are concerned about C3 Toronto from a Christian perspective, right? They have theological issues with C3 Toronto. That's not really the sort of position that I would criticize or be concerned from. Mine more has to do with the way in which I think some of the more questionable aspects of contemporary culture actually get amplified at C3 Toronto, and also the role of money there, and how it.
Sorry, what did you mean by the first thing? What gets amplified? The role of.
So I mentioned this in the film very briefly, and I guess I think that there is a sort of basic kind of or maybe implicit push within the popular culture to sort of privilege the values of, say, sex appeal, popularity, novelty, over and above every other value, competing value.
Image.
And, right, image. That's right. Sort of, you know, manipulating or tailoring your self-image or presentation, right? And I guess, you know, this is going to reflect my own personal views, but I would like to see a place, a spiritual place, sort of kind of counteract that. Those tendencies, right? Offer a sort of a competing alternative, we'll say. But I think that isn't what C3 Toronto, for the most part, does. I actually think it kind of amplifies or exacerbates those very tendencies within popular culture, right? So that's one concern that continually kind of came back.
And the other you mentioned is money, because they survive on donations, right? The church grows from time and financial contributions from its, I don't know if they say parishioners or if that's just a Catholic thing, members.
I mean, that in itself seems to me pretty run of the mill. I mean, that's true of most religious organizations. They require donations, of course. And so that itself is not concerning. But more the way, the role that giving, that is financially, plays in their theology, right? The role that money plays as a kind of indicator of faith, say,
right?
Of the degree of, you know, so how much you give reflects just how much faith you have and how committed of a Christian you are within that theology.
Right.
That to me is it's a very potentially dangerous theology, because it on one side can push people to give when they just cannot, when they really ought not, for you know, given their circumstances. But at the same time, it can also lead to a sort of condemning those who don't, right? And also a sort of privileging and kind of glorifying of those people who have the most wealth, right? If wealth is itself an indicator of faith, then you know, it follows that the wealthier you are, the more faithful that you are, the more blessed you are.
Yeah. I'll tell you what concerned me just watching the film and then doing research after. I'm really big on authenticity and transparency. I would say they're like my core values. And so when I hear numerous people talking about people who were, let's say, in same-sex relationships, approaching leadership, approaching the pastor, in particular, Sam Pickens, is that right, Sam Pickens?
Yep.
And asking about the stand, what's the church's stand? And getting rhetoric like, everybody is welcome here, we all belong, you know, it's not for me to say that there's something wrong. Very vague, ambiguous kinds of answers that lead people to believe that they're welcome. And yet, they're not steered to C3's website, which if you go, it's crystal clear. It's spelt out that marriage is between a man and a woman, that same-sex homosexuality is not okay. It's a sin. Like they're really clear. And yet at C3 Toronto, the people that I read about, one fellow said he posted on social media that, you know, that he was connected with the church. And that's who led him to the website going, what are you doing? Like this gay man, what are you doing? And then somewhere in his story, it was okay to be in on the worship team when he was not in a relationship. So the message he got was, it's okay that you're homosexual, but you can't be in a homosexual relationship. And then you're out. You're literally outed. And he was. And so it's that kind of, I think the other quote that I remember, somebody came, it was all very vague for a number of people, but somebody came outside the organization to give a talk. Vivier, I think his name was. Do you know that story? Oh, John?
Yes, Vivier? Right.
He was an author and another pastor from somewhere else. But he, for this person who was sharing his story, thinking he was welcome here, mm-hmm. and I think he'd been a member for 3 years of the church, not in a relationship, but gay. And so he hears this man preach, and he quotes the scripture talking about the sin and the dishonor and all the rest of that. So he freaks out, as do many people. And then Sam, I actually love to read you what he says, because it's such a pullback from... Here, hold on. So huge reaction. He apologized. Sam apologized. But he said, Bevere... his sermon was strong and true, and after a deep study of the scriptures, I believe with full conviction that the identity of being a homosexual is not a sin, according to scripture, but I believe that same-sex sexual practices are sinful to God and do not please him. I'm also convinced that the biblical definition of marriage designed by God is between a man and a woman. I know it may not be socially cool, but my faith is not based on society. It's based on God. Like, that's, you know, if you're going to be some sort of fundamentalist organization, at least be it. My problem is, like, that's okay. That's your face. That's what you're doing. Okay, people, not for me. Thank you. But when there's this kind of, it is, that's why I use the word indoctrination, because I understand cults and I understand that the presentation, the pulling people into a sense of belonging and connection and celebration and meaning, those are essential. They're as important as air and water and food. Like, you need those things as a human being to flourish. And so that's given to you and the rest is kind of hidden. And that I just go, sorry, red flag, cult. Okay, Galen, I'm giving it to you. I went on for a bit there, but I feel very strongly about power over in any way, shape, or form. You can believe whatever you want, but if you're surrendering it unknowingly through a process of group kind of indoctrination, I've got a real problem with that.
I certainly won't. I won't disagree with you, and I'm. I mean, I don't. I'm not here to defend them. I think...
But help me understand it. How do millennials do that? How do they give their power up like that? It's a savvy generation. They're media savvy. They're connected and maybe one of the loneliest, I've heard that, one of the loneliest generations, because and yet so connected and information is so available. How does something like this happen?
Well, okay, so I think that there's two sides to this. One is, as you've pointed out, the church leadership, I mean, Sam and Jess are very aware that they have started a church in Toronto. And in Toronto, you know, generally speaking, LGBTQ issues are, you know, at the forefront of lots of people's minds. And so it's, you know, they've been interviewed over and over again about this. And they're always asked it. So I suspect that from their perspective, it's a strategic move, right? A sort of downplaying what the church's stance is and not really talking about their own personal views unless kind of prompted to. So keeping that quiet. And so really it's not, for the most part, you know, you did mention an instance where it was discussed in a sermon, but that was a guest pastor. And so actually you rarely hear about these issues from the pulpit when it's just, you know, the regular C3 Toronto pastors. So on one side, it's their, you know, they know that they just wouldn't be growing to the size that they are if they didn't do this, right? Now, of course, that doesn't excuse it.
Well, the harm to the people who then realize that for years they've dedicated their heart, their love, their money their money too. Mm-hmm. This was their community. I mean, it's shattering. The repercussions are shattering, I think, when a person's found a place where they think they belong and they're connected and supported and they realize it's based on a lie. It's actually not true. That has devastating consequences.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that. And I've interviewed people for whom that is their reality. One thing I would say, you asked, you know, how do millennials sort of fall for this or you know, how does this happen? I think that it is a downplayed, so it's not obvious and you kind of have to do some digging in order to figure this out or find
right.
it out.
Right.
And the other thing is that, you know, I wish I had the sort of quantitative studies to be able to sort of speak confidently about this, but I know that there are some people for whom their experience is precisely as you've described. You know, they get outed, you know, after being totally invested, and it's a devastating experience. I've also interviewed members who identify as queer or members of the LGBTQ community and who are committed members, and they, you know, in interviews with them, they have said that they don't feel discriminated against. They recognize that the church doesn't sort of outwardly embrace them, but they nevertheless, I mean, it's possible that that has changed, right? I mean, I'm just speaking from, you know, the interviews that I've done. But I think if I were to sort of try and think about why someone would do that, why would they stay when they know they're not sort of outwardly embraced, right, or celebrated? I think you kind of answered that. I think that for some of these members, they get so much from this. They get meaning, they get community, they get a real sense of belonging and purpose. And they, I guess, you know, have sort of, you know, they've sort of said, well, I guess I will just have to kind of accept this unfortunate aspect of the church. It's, I mean, that's me hypothesizing. I don't actually know if that's what's going on.
Well, tell us about some of the interviews, because I'm surprised. So tell us some of the interviews of people who actually thought, who did identify,
right.
And found this acceptable, because I can't wrap my head around it. To me, it's an expression of who you are. Either
right.
you're welcome exactly as you are, because that's literally what they say. Right, you found a home here. You're welcome the way you are, except that's not said. So how do the people you interviewed, can you give us a specific story maybe?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I obviously won't say names, but I can tell you I interviewed a young man who was queer, and he had been at the church for over a year, and he'd become quite involved. He was in you know, leading connect groups and was part of service groups, and he was clearly someone who had kind of committed himself, both in terms of time and finances, to the church, and was in a relationship, you know, with his partner. And I asked him outright. I said, you know, what is your view of this? You know, that mm-hmm. of the church's kind of approach to this, and he seemed to sort of take the view that, again, he didn't think that he was outwardly discriminated against. He didn't think that he wasn't accepted. He recognized that the church wasn't sort of positively embracing him or the community that he belongs to. And I think that did make him frustrated and angry. But he saw that as a sort of, I guess, something that just had to be accepted in order to sort of get the benefits from the church that he was getting.
And was he in a relationship?
Yeah, he was.
He was. So he was
in
intimate
a relationship, yeah.
and in a committed relationship.
That's
or
right.
Practice.
That's right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, I did all of my field work over 2018, right?
Right.
And so I you know, a part of me wants to follow up and ask him, how are things now, right? Because it's maybe things have changed. I completely agree with you. I mean, to not have a core part of your identity accepted, to have to hide it.
Well, it's a sin. You are sinning against God. The very reason that you're in this environment and connecting with people, who you are and how you practice. Like I still, even with your example, if he's in a relationship, he is sinning again, according to the Christian church, that Christian church, sinning against God.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people are amazingly adept at kind of, you know, finding ways to, you know, compromise. And I don't, I'm not trying to say he's compromising his beliefs by any means, but I'm just mean he saw it as a kind of, I guess,
a cross
to bear or something. Yeah, exactly. A trade-off. And then,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of what happens again in a cult. You have to trade off. You can't, you know, some of the characteristics are that you don't question certain things. It is the way it is. You also have a certain, you follow a certain authority outside of yourself. And to me, that's the main difference between spirituality and religion. Spirituality to me is an inner experience. Yes, you can have a direct experience. Religion always requires there are outside laws from God, supposedly, and interpreted by men and, you know, endorsed by men. So lots of room for error. Whereas when you have an inner experience, you get to make of it whatever you want. To me, a healthy spirituality, because it can be obviously twisted there too. And there are lots of spiritual cults that are not Christian. But the whole idea is if it's something external to me, you're already like, you're basically saying that you're not whole, not complete, that there's something you've got to get outside of yourself. And as opposed to something you need to remember and something you might need to discover or and then share, totally different concept. And that to me is the difference between spirituality and religion. But in this case, like I just, when I watch the movie, it's neither an expose, it's definitely not an expose, but nor is it endorsing completely. It feels very much on the fence. But I do notice that the scandals, the history of C3, which is quite horrific, not a little bit, it's definitely on par with the Catholic Church in terms of atrocities that have occurred in the past. And C3 is only 40 years old, right? Catholic Church has been going on for quite a bit longer. That wasn't talked about in the film. And so if part of the film's intent was for people to decide for themselves, again, why would all the information, I know you didn't make it, but do you have a sense of why all that information wouldn't be in the film?
Yeah, I think I do. So, I mean, I think that Ali, my impression is that Ali wasn't, as you say, trying to make an expose. So, and in fact, you know, while, over the course of filming, an expose did come out in Australia. There was a sort of investigative
current affair, right?
Yeah, that's
at
right.
At the same time, yeah. Was, so was yeah, that was, discussed? Because I wanted
yeah,
to get into.
Yeah,
that.
she was. You know, she chatted with me about it, and it was, you know, and that does exist, right? So that kind of journalistic expose does exist, and I think Ali consciously didn't want to make that, A, because it already exists, but B, because in a sense, look, my interpretation is that the film is in some sense, yes, about C3 Toronto and in some sense about the people who go there, but it's also not just about that. I don't watch that film and think this is just for those of us who've never been there to be able to get to know and judge for ourselves what this church is like. That just isn't the way I understand what the purpose of the film is. I actually think that the film is meant to get to people to think about the reasons why some people would go to a church like that, right? And maybe what it is about, say, the urban metropolitan experience, maybe even more broadly, you know, certain, you know, modern societies, what leads people to seek out these kinds of places. I think that if we reframe that as the sort of core purpose of the film, then, you know, C3 becomes a case study for us to understand those kinds of bigger issues. And it's not about trying to sort of take down or expose the evils at the core of C3 Toronto.
So why do you think, bottom line, why do you think they're drawn to this kind of experience, especially millennials?
So I don't think it's any one thing. I think it varies from person to person. But I think if you had to identify trends, you've raised this. So one has to do with loneliness, right? A lack of community and a, you know, a heightened sense of both social isolation and insecurity. I think a lot of young people especially are deeply insecure. And it's not just that C3 promises a place where you can, you know, as it were, be part of a family, as they say, but also offer, you know, that the theology that they preach there offers access to an all-loving, all-powerful God that is ever-present. That's a very powerful thing it's just a very powerful thing for those who kind of sign on. And I think that in addition to that, it's an empowering thing. And so the stories that I heard over and over again was, you know, people struggling with very personal crises, be it about loneliness or about insecurity or loss or what have you, and finding a place of refuge and empowerment at C3 Toronto.
Through
Jesus, that's right,
that's it.
And the Holy Spirit.
Like, which means that's through, right, your pastor, through some direct, through a means that says this is how it's done, right?
Yeah, well, but the interesting thing about the way in which C3 members talk about their church is that they actually see it as, and this goes back to my earlier, you know, sort of initial point about the connections between SBNR and charismatic Christianity, that they don't see it as that kind of, you know, follow an external authority type of approach to religion. In fact, most of the C3 members that I spoke to, you know, many of them grew up in quite conservative religious homes, and they contrasted what they found at C3 with that far more kind of strict, even in some cases authoritarian approach to religion, right? So there's a lot of talk at C3 about, you know, this being a relational approach to Christianity, or a kind of a very, you know, the focus is not on sort of following doctrine, but on developing a relationship with Jesus, this kind of thing. And that is something that, at least from the self-understanding and from the perspective of those members that are committed to it, they see it as actually more free than the religiosity that they might have grown up with.
But isn't that because it's hidden? It's still there. You couldn't, C3 Toronto couldn't do a thing that C3 Australia wasn't sanctioning.
That is true. And I completely agree. I mean, the social structures are there, certainly, and the organizational structures. And of course, theologically, there's lots of norms and even in some cases sort of imperatives and commandments, but members, you know, often they're, you know, I don't take the view that most of the members there are sort of brainwashed. I think that they're for the most part quite reflective people and
aware of the scriptures and the C3 Australia connection and the history. You think they're aware of?
Well, whether they're aware of the scandals associated with C3 in Australia, I don't know. I suspect,
but the connection is
not.
People are not led to that website. When you look at that website, it's a completely different presentation, right?
Yeah. No, and I think that's true.
Yeah.
I think they do make reference, for instance, regularly in sermons about being part of a wider C3 church family, right? And so there is often reference to C3 in Australia, in Oxford Falls, where Pastor Phil is, but nevertheless, you're right. I mean, I don't think that it's encouraged for everyone to go learn the whole history of the C3 movement.
Well, and no, it's not just that. It's just that you are part of it. And it's not like the way you're saying is, okay, they're not brainwashed, but we're presenting a certain way to appeal to a certain group of people. And it feels, especially for those who are raised in Christian homes, way cooler than whatever they were raised with. But the truth is, it's if you look at the doctrine, it's the same fundamentalist doctrine underneath. And when push comes to shove, that's what's, that's the reality that they don't know. I guess I'm more concerned with why what people don't know than what the presentation, how the presentation is impacting.
Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, I guess I would agree that, C3 Toronto is more, say, socially conservative than they let on. I think they're less fundamentalist than certainly some of the fundamentalisms that you find in the States, right, where it is very explicit that, you know, you're just, you aren't even accepted in the slightest bit, and there's just outright discrimination. So you know, I'm not by any means trying to sort of defend them. I'm just trying to make the point that I don't think that the members there, I mean, look, I think it would also be wrong to think that all millennials there are super progressive. I mean, there are some socially conservative, in fact, many socially conservative millennials there, right? And the irony, of course, is, as I was sort of mentioning before, is that they see themselves as having kind of become a little bit more progressive mm-hmm. than, say, their parents, right? So they've kind of, they've opened their minds a bit more, and that's what they find at C3. But of course, from a sort of, from a progressive standpoint, they're not nearly progressive enough.
Are most of the new people, are they actually new, or are they coming from a Christian background, would you say?
Yeah, so I think the majority, vast majority, in fact, were raised Christian, and in fact, raised in relatively conservative Christian homes.
Right. Okay. So this does feel like progression then for them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yeah. In fact, I only interviewed a few people, really, like a handful, who had not grown up with any religious socialization.
Gotcha. Okay. So we only have a few more minutes. I'm only going to talk about one scandal. It's not because it's current. There, you know, if people are interested, go on, just Google it. A Current Affair, which is an Australian television show, did quite an expose that's, like I say, quite horrific. But currently, meaning just in June 16th, the pastors Dave and Jenny Gilpin in the UK have resigned because of charges against them around racism. And their church was predominantly Black. They decided they needed white people. So we actually have screenshots to look at of him saying, look, don't take pictures for Instagram of Black people. Let's put a white person in there. Let's, what was the other thing? In the singing, in the worship team, let's put in a lead white person. Like there's a whole thing going on. And the strange part to me, or the amazing part, is social media, which is such a big part of this church, is also what now bites you. Because it's right there. You look at those screenshots. It hasn't gone anywhere. It's not just, you know, people are talking about it. So they have resigned. And I guess it's an ongoing investigation. It's you know, I don't know what my point of that is, except that, I think I do find it rather ironic that the very thing that promotes, you know, the base and grows it is the thing that can bring it down if people are informed and talking and feel like they have the right to speak up. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about that, or is that
no? To be completely honest, I hadn't heard about that. In part because I've, I finished doing field work there at the end of 2018, and then I spent 2019 writing up my thesis. And since then, I defended my thesis, and I've been sort of revising to publish the book. So. I haven't been keeping abreast of all of the C3 developments, to be completely honest. But you know, at the same time, I'm not sort of surprised that something like that would, you know, has happened. And of course, social media is it's a sort of double-edged sword, and in many ways, right? I mean, you can call things out, but you can be called out, and this is just the nature of it.
So Galen, what most impacted you in this whole experience, this whole exploration? What are you left with that surprises you about yourself and about your own spirituality?
That's a big question. So I think that So going to C3 was an eye-opening experience for me. It was, as I said, it was sort of very shocking. At first, I really didn't know what to. I'd never seen anything like this, and so I didn't really have a framework to make sense of it. But now, with hindsight, I guess I've come to think that it's a lot more complicated than maybe a kind of simplistic characterization would allow. I think that, and that's not to defend it by any means. In fact, you know, I have very strong criticisms and personal criticisms that, but as a scholar, of course, and especially as a social scientist, I sort of keep those to one side in some respect, but it's more just, I think that I have learned a lot, both about my own society, that is, you know, just Toronto in a kind of specific sense, and more broadly, sort of very modern societies. I've learned a lot about them by studying places like C3. That can be unintuitive for some people, because, you know, a lot of people, I think, just think this is completely foreign to say a modern secular society, but I would argue that no, that's not true. That in some respects they're so deeply tied, right, together, and so in a sense I've kind of I've learned to better understand my own society and also the sort of the pitfalls maybe in some of modern life, and also to be able to appreciate the sort of full spectrum of the human experience, you know, in a way that perhaps I didn't before. And I think also in some respects, you know, this is a very personal dimension, which to be completely honest, as a sort of social scientist, I'm trained not to talk about, but nevertheless, I do think that it has clarified for me what I, you know, what I see as the sort of, as the appropriate role for religion. That sounds sort of a bit strict, but, you know, I guess maybe just to give some context, I would say that a lot of people, and this is, I'm speaking sort of anecdotally here, but I think a lot of people who are sort of completely unfamiliar with not just Christianity, but religion in general, you know, they just would never consider anything religious or spiritual even. I think people, at least a number of those people would look at this and say, I have no interest in this, but at the same time be very, very quick to sort of say, but this is not what I think good religion is, right? So there's lots of people, I think, that even though they have no interest in being part of a religious or spiritual group, are very quick to say what they think religion should or should be, right? And subscribe that or prescribe that. And in a sense, I think that was something that I kept coming back to over the course of doing research. I was sort of thinking, you know, am I someone who, you know, am I going there and saying, well, this is what I think they should be. This is what I think a good, quote unquote, Christian community should be. But at the same time, I have no interest in being a part of that. you know, so that's something that I guess I think has a wider significance and relevance. You know, it's something that I've tried to think about a lot and catch myself on, and I've discussed it with a number of others as well. So yeah, that's an insight I guess I thought worth sharing.
And tell us the name of your thesis again.
Well, maybe what I'll do is I'll tell you the name of the book, which the thesis will, fingers crossed, hopefully soon be.
And you need to give that information as well to Mark, because that's something, then people could read it. That would be of interest.
Yeah, of course. Well, listeners, you can read the thesis now. Not that you would want to, because it's a monster of a thing. But but the book will hopefully be less massive and more accessible. And the book's title, at least at present, is The Religion of the Heart, Spirituality, and the Making of Romantic Liberal Modernity.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for coming on the show. And again, hashtag blessed is going to be on July 18th at 8 p.m. on CBC, and I think available for streaming on CBC Gem as well. And you'll see Galen in the movie, and if you're curious about C3, more about that particular organization. I know they just opened up in Vancouver. I didn't have time to research that because I went down the rabbit hole in Australia going, oh my God, but that's me. So thanks for coming on the show, Galen. And maybe when it's in your book, we could do another one and just dig right into spirituality and millennials. I find it, the whole topic, you know, wondering if it different things appeal to generations. I just find that fascinating, especially with the current climate and the issues that millennials are facing that maybe, you know, boomers didn't or like that. It would be very interesting. So thanks.
I'd love that. Yeah. And thanks so much for having me.
Okay, Galen, take care.
You too.
Thanks, everyone. And don't forget, this will also air on Conscious Living Radio 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Co-op Radio. Thanks for joining.
Listening to Conscious Living Radio. For free show downloads, additional information about our guests and topics, or details about upcoming programs, check us out at consciouslivingradio.org.
The Greater Vancouver Food Bank has been providing support for our cities for almost 40 years and has been vital to helping thousands of community members through the COVID-19 crisis. To find out how you might benefit from the Greater Vancouver Food Bank's services, or to learn how you might donate money or volunteer your time, please visit their website at foodbank.bc.ca.